and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio on this live broadcast from Studio 14 this Monday, May 13, 2024. South Sudan's government and opposition delegates meeting in Nairobi affirmed their commitment to finding a solution that brings stability to their country.
On our side, as the government of South Sudan, we have come in good faith. We have come to negotiate and approach the issue holistically.
And South Sudan's vice president acknowledges the war in Sudan has precipitated an oil crisis in South Sudan.
We are not exporting oil from Block 3 and Block 7, not the Upper Nile. And this is the bigger part of our oil, almost about 60% of what we export.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Government and opposition delegations at the peace talks express hope for negotiation to reach the final stage of the South Sudan's peace initiative, aiming to end years of conflict and suffering. Reporting from Nairobi, William Sunday Mabor has the details.
South Sudan government spokesperson Michael Makwelua says the government is committed in the negotiations, prioritizing inclusive peace talks without divisions.
On our side, as the government of South Sudan, we have come in good faith. We have come to negotiate and approach the issue holistically. We are not divided, leaving anybody outside, because we want to make sure that we silence the guns in South Sudan. We want peace for our people. We want peace for the people of South Sudan. The people of South Sudan have suffered for long, and as such, there is need for us this time to unite our ranks under the auspices of the government of Kenya.
Makwei expresses hope for successful negotiations in Nairobi, citing Kenya's historical role in South Sudan's peace efforts.
Peace had always been coming to South Sudan through the government of Kenya, and it is through the government of Kenya that the CPA was initiated, which led to the best of the Republic of South Sudan. We are optimistic that this time, this initiative will find its way to the success, and we will achieve the necessary required peace for the people of South Sudan.
General Paul Malong, Awan, leader of the South Sudan United Front, emphasizes his group's commitment to genuine negotiations.
We are for peace, and I think from my side or from our side, we are going to have almost a genuine peace in our heart and in our discussion, because peace is for our people. Peace is for us. So there is no anything that can make us not to negotiate in good faith.
Malong urges the government to actively participate in the negotiations to reach a solution.
The government will be the one to provide the solution, because all this time we are negotiating and government doesn't come with a solution to be rejected or to be accepted. So we will see this time if they came with anything that will just make us come together, there will be no problem. We are ready for peace, because somebody like me, I have 8 years in Kenya and I'm not doing anything. And my family are in South Sudan. Relatives, supporters, brothers, all South Sudanese, that we love them, they are in the South. For me, we will negotiate for peace genuinely.
Stephen Lado Lokoja, a spokesperson for National Salvation Revolutionary Command, emphasizes dialogue to resolve issues between the government and opposition groups.
It is through talks that we can amicably resolve the matter. So we are here to negotiate peace in good faith. And with this commitment, we hope that the government will understand that the people of South Sudan at the moment really in great suffering. So the better we compromise for the sake of this nation. So we are committed for these talks with the government. With this hope, we can restore peace and stability to our country, South Sudan.
Pagana Amum, Real SPLM leader, also expresses support for successful negotiations to end misunderstandings, emphasizing the spirit of brotherhood with the President Salva Kiir. In 2018, South Sudan's government and some opposition groups signed a revitalized peace agreement to eventually lead to national elections. However, several groups did not sign on, and there has been continued conflict in the parts of the country. Reporting from Nairobi, Kenya, this is William Sunday Mabur for VOA News.
Still on the South Sudan peace talks, a leading member of South Sudan's holdout group says The country needs a serious dialogue to discuss the root causes of its problems. Pagana Mum spoke as Kenyan President William Ruto officially launched a mediation process on Thursday to bring about peace between the South Sudan government and the lagging groups. Amum told my colleague James Batty that the holdouts want to reform the country and put it on the path of democratic transition and development.
Position and in the National Consensus Forum, we see this initiative, which President Ruto calls it Hope Initiative. We see it as probably the last opportunity to rescue South Sudan and avoid its disintegration into chaos and disorder. We believe this should be a chance for South Sudanese to engage in a serious dialogue with the aim to develop national consensus and agree to a new social contract that could be the basis of a state and nation building in South Sudan.
So, if I understand, your group is the one that has not yet ratified the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. Because when you say you need dialogue, what is it that you want?
What we want is for South Sudanese stakeholders to sit together, agree on how to build the South Sudanese state, how to agree on the relationship and define the relationship between the citizens and their state, and what type of a state that we want to have. Definitely, the people of South Sudan struggled to have their own state, to be independent, and the purpose was to build a state that can deliver on all the promises of the liberation struggle that we have waged from generation to generation. That is what is needed. What we actually want is to rescue South Sudan. South Sudan today is not only a fragile state, it is actually collapsing into chaos and disorder. We need to rescue it for us to have a state.
Do you want to be a part of this government? Otherwise, what do you say to those South Sudanese who say a group like yours are peace spoilers?
There is no peace in South Sudan to spoil. The peace in South Sudan has been destroyed and it is spoiled already by the current government and the parties that have been engaged in violent power struggle, which has taken tribal lines and which has resulted into the killing and the death of hundreds of thousands of our people, and displacement of millions into refuge outside the countries and millions inside the country.
Would you agree that perhaps one place to start from to build this peaceful South Sudan is to have an election, which is scheduled for the end of this year? Do you think South Sudan is ready for election this year?
No. These elections are a joke. After all, there is no constitution that defines the structures of government and even articulate clearly what are the electable positions. Secondly, the environment in the country with the rampant violence that is all over the place, there are no conditions for a peaceful election.
That's Pagana Mum, leader of Real SPLM, one of the opposition groups engaged in peace talks with the South Sudan government in Nairobi, Kenya. He spoke with my colleague James Batty. South Sudan's Vice President for Infrastructure Cluster, Taban Dengai, says hopes for resuming oil production in Upper Nile State are slim because of the damage to the pipeline that carries the oil to Port Sudan, a result of the fighting in Sudan. Reporting for VOA News, Manyang David Mayar brings us more details from Juba.
In February, an oil pipeline that carries South Sudan's oil exports to international market through Sudan was damaged in White Nile State because of fighting in Sudan's war. This led the Dar Petroleum Oil Company to halt oil exports. During a public gathering in Juba on Sunday, Vice President Taban Dengai said that restarting oil production in Upper Nile appears unlikely in the near future.
We are not exporting oil from Block 3 and Block 7, not in Upper Nile. And this is the bigger part of our oil. Almost about 60% of what we export. It has stopped for the last 4 months. Mama Ruth, it will resume again. Maybe when war is stopped in Sudan, the pipeline that it could harm that. Because this pipeline, we don't use it on a daily basis, it can get spoiled. So we have no high hope on that oil any longer.
South Sudan heavily relies on revenue from crude oil production in Upper Nile and Unity States. Deng noted that while oil fields in Unity State are operational, their contribution to revenue is minimal.
El petrol bitat Ruwen and Bentiu area.
The petroleum in Ruwen and Bentiu is only 40% of our revenues. It is very little because it is the only one that started production a long time ago. And you know that oil is a depleting resource, and so it is already depleting. It is already finishing.
The lack of crude oil exports is already affecting the economy. The South Sudanese pound continues to depreciate against the U.S. dollar, which now trades at 3,200 pounds to the dollar in the parallel market. Abraham Kwalnyuon, a professor of politics and economics at the University of Juba, suggests implementing austerity measures to navigate the economic challenges.
And these austerity measures should be introduced in the way that it could only affect the upper class, like those who are the top government ministers, the top generals, and maybe use that money that was consumed for maybe chapter 2 and chapter 3 to be able to improve the life of the people, so that the normal citizen, like the soldiers and the civil servant, could be able to get something small that would make them to sustain their life.
Nguyen urges the government to prioritize salary payments, which are covered in chapter 1 of the fiscal year budget, while reducing expenditures on operations and development in chapter 2 and 3. The price of food commodities has tripled over the past 4 months, and civil servants have gone unpaid for over 6 months. Nguyen emphasizes the importance of self-sufficiency amidst the economic downturn.
This economic hardship has collided with the right season for farming. So what all of us should be able to do as people of South Sudan is to go pick our jembe, pick our hoes, and go to the farm, so that in the next 3 to 4 months, we could be able to have some product that could be able to make us to survive on and put on the table. And the government should be able to maintain peace and security.
Manyok Chol David, a 45-year-old university lecturer, is among those seeking alternative income sources to support his family.
I have to hustle, involved in subsistence farming along streams of the Nile, which is not bad at all. And then I also involved in the bricklaying businesses around Juba suburb. And at time I fall back to my colleagues who work in the UN agencies to provide me with some lump sum sometimes to balance my budget at home. Generally, for us in South Sudan, we have really a big challenge. And I urge our government to see a way how to deal with these challenges.
In April, news emerged of a deal between the South Sudanese government and a company in the United Arab Emirates. The deal aims to provide the South Sudanese government with at least $12 billion in exchange for crude oil over 20 years. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, opposition groups in Chad challenge the results of last week's presidential election. Stay tuned.
Listener of South Sudan in Focus, we have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. In Sudan, last month, 72 villages and settlements were destroyed or damaged due to fires resulting from the ongoing conflict, a UK-based rights group reported on Monday. Sudan Witness, a project by the nonprofit Center for Information Resilience, noted an unprecedented surge in fires since the conflict began in April 2023. Fires in Sudan are often used as weapons of war, especially in the Darfur region. Sudan Witnesses' analysis revealed that 31 settlements were affected by fires in April alone, with a more than 50% destruction rate. Investigators utilized social media and satellite imagery and NASA's public fire monitoring data to examine fire patterns across Sudan. In North Darfur's capital, Al-Fashir, fighting between the military and the paramilitary forces intensified over the weekend. At least 39 civilians were killed and 189 injured, according to a civil society group that spoke to the Washington Post on Sunday. The group did not want to be identified for fear of being targeted by the paramilitary rapid support forces, which has been accused of targeting civilians in the past. An airstrike near a pediatric hospital in Al-Fashir claimed the lives of two children and a caregiver, according to Doctors Without Borders over the weekend. The UN has reported over 800 displaced people from the region. The conflict has devastated Sudan, leaving more than 14,000 dead, thousands wounded, and hundreds of thousands displaced. In Chad, opposition candidates who lost the recent presidential election have filed paperwork challenging President Mohamed Idriss Deby's victory. The legal challenge comes as the media there appeal a decision barring them from reporting on election-related violence. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from neighboring Cameroon.
State television reported on Monday that the country's Constitutional Council received a petition from opposition candidate Success Masra calling for results of the May 6 vote to be annulled. The Central African States Elections Management Body, or ANJ, declared Masra second with more than 18% of the votes cast. The transitional president, General Mahamat Idriss Deby, won more than 61% of the vote, exceeding the 50% mandate needed to avoid a runoff. Deby's victory follows the death of his father, Idriss Deby, in 2021 and completes the country's three-year transition from military to civilian rule. Masra and the Transformers Party he leads allege massive electoral fraud, including the stuffing of ballot boxes and soldiers chasing opposition representatives from polling stations. Masra alleges that soldiers carried ballot boxes to military barracks where government troops counted and declared results instead of ANJ. The Transformers say scores of opposition officials and hundreds of Masra supporters were arrested and detained by government troops. Chad's military government says Deby won the election and some opposition parties want to create chaos by not respecting the vote. Deby calls the allegations unfounded. Sitak Yomantina Beni is the Transformers vice president. He spoke on Monday with VOA via a messaging app from Chadian capital N'Djamena. Benny says Masra has asked civilians to maintain peace and avoid reacting violently to ongoing provocations from Deby's supporters. He says it is an open secret that rights and freedoms are abused in Chad, but that this time civilians, opposition and civil society are ready to fight back if the Constitutional Council fails to render justice and give back what he calls Masra's stolen victory. Beni said peaceful demonstrations were held on Friday, Saturday and Sunday in several areas including N'Djamena and Mundu, Chad's second largest city. Yassin Abdarahmane Sekini, another losing candidate, said he also filed a petition asking the Constitutional Council to order Ange to do a public recount of the votes. Evarist Ngairem Tode is a political affairs lecturer and researcher at the University of N'Djamena in Chad. He says the fact that Chad's military leaders ordered government troops to undemocratically vote for Deby is an indication they are not ready to lose their grip on power. He says it is very surprising that Chad's elections management body published provisional results at 8 p.m. on Thursday after it had announced at 2 p.m. that it was very difficult for the body to assemble results sheets from more than 26,000 polling stations. Tolde said it will be very difficult for the Constitutional Council to cancel provisional results of the May 6 presidential elections declared by Ange. Both institutions were formed by Deby. Ange says it is independent and that the results published are free, transparent and credible, reflecting the verdicts of the ballot. Civil society and opposition groups say the troops deployed after Thursday's publication of partial results are still intimidating and arresting civilians, especially in N'Djamena. They say the death toll from shooting since Thursday has increased to 30. On Monday, Chad's Journalism Union condemned a government order that stops the news media from reporting on post-election tensions and violence and orders news organizations to desist from giving casualty figures. The Constitutional Council has until May 21 to rule on the petitions and proclaim definitive results. But Chad's transitional officials already report that Nigerian President Bola Tinubu, along with Guinea-Bissau's President Umaru Sissoko Embalo, Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban and Kenyan President William Ruto have congratulated Deby. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that's all we have for you this Monday. Don't forget to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with Moses Sengo and the song Africa Moto.
love you.
We've been listening to the song Africa Moto by Moses Singo. I am your host, Nabil Bia, join Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Helen, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On the eve of World Press Freedom Day, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield recognized the remarkable courage and vital contributions made by journalists around the world. As we mourn the dozens of journalists killed in Gaza, as hundreds more remain unjustly detained around the world, and as Evan Gershkovich marks 400 days in a Russian prison, this occasion is less a celebration than an urgent call to action, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. And it is a reminder that a free and independent press is the cornerstone of every democracy. We count on the media to expose corruption and counter disinformation, to facilitate the exchange of ideas and shine a spotlight on human rights abuses, noted Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. We rely on journalists and media workers to seek out the truth, to tell the world what we need to know, and to hold the powerful accountable. This work is as important as ever today as we face down new and unprecedented challenges to our democracies, our communities, and to international peace and security itself. Journalists continue to face harassment and intimidation. They are arbitrarily and unlawfully surveilled by governments, including their own governments. They are met with cyber attacks and disinformation campaigns, and far too often they are violently attacked and wrongfully detained, simply for telling the truth. Evan Gershkovich's crime was reporting the facts about Russia's illegal war in Ukraine, noted Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Locking Evan up was meant to be a sign of toughness and strength and of control. But the truth is, this pernicious targeting by the Kremlin and by strongmen across the world only reveals their weakness and their fear, because they know that history is not kind to those who squash dissent through force. That oppression always begets resistance, and that, as Dr. Martin Luther King famously said, the moral arc of the universe bends toward justice. Other detained journalists include Alsu Kurmasheva, a Prague-based Russian-American journalist with Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty. Kurmasheva was arrested in Kazan, Russia on October 18, 2023, and charged with failure to register as a foreign agent. And Austin Bennett Tice is an American freelance journalist who was kidnapped while reporting in Syria on August 14, 2012. Every day, the United States is working to free unjustly imprisoned journalists and combat impunity for violence and other injustices committed against them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.